Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's call over to Lauren Presti, Care Manager with the Autism Team. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Andrea. Good day, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Lauren Presti, and I am a case manager for the Autism Team at Cigna Behavioral Health. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, you'll be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's seminar. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cignabehavioral.com. On the left side of your screen, click on Autism Awareness, scroll to the top of the screen to today's date, and you will find today's handout. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information on your policy topics discussed today, you can contact the Autism Team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I do have the pleasure of introducing Megan Valley with the Southwest Autism Research and Resource Center. Megan has a Master's of Science in Education and is a clinical interventionist with SARC. Thank you, Megan.
Hi, everybody. Today I'm going to talk about a social skills intervention strategy for children with autism. I'm currently in coordinating services between school and home for a few of our clients here at SARC. So I just want to start with a base of an understanding of autism. Obviously, autism is the most prevalent child developmental disorder in the U.S. Currently, it affects 1 in 110 children and is more prevalent in males than females. Every 4 male to 1 female is affected with ASD. Currently in Arizona in 2002, the median age of diagnosis for autism was 5 years and 3 months. And this is extremely late in comparison to the nationwide average. So in Arizona, we have been working on early diagnosis and early intervention because that's extremely important for children with ASD. Autism is a persuasive developmental disorder with excesses and deficiencies in behavior. The three core areas that are affected by autism are social interaction, communication, and restrictive and repetitive behavior. Not every student has to be impaired in all three of these core areas. They could be impaired in one. They also could be impaired in all three. So like many people say, if you've met one child with autism, you've met one child with autism. Every kid is different, and every kid has different strengths and weaknesses. If we look at the next slide, you'll see three circles with the core deficits of autism, obviously social, communication, and restrictive repetitive behavior. So once again, you can see that a child might have deficiency in restrictive repetitive behavior, but might not have a deficiency also in social communication, or might have all three. Today, we're going to talk about the social component of autism and discuss a brief case study that we've done to improve social skills in a school setting. So the next slide goes to research on social development. Children with ASD are going to have difficulty developing social skills on their own. Some of these social skills include conversations, joining activities, maintaining friendships, games, or even a simple conversation, and inviting others to play with them. The next study was done on all people with disabilities, not just with autism, and showed that because of a lack of social relationships in childhood, we definitely see a decrease in employment, self-confidence, independent living, and some severe mental problems. So as we all know, relationships and friendships kind of are very important because they help our self-esteem. They help us connect with others, so that's why it's important to work on these skills with our kids with autism. And the next slide talks about the benefits of relationships and friendships as we all experience and also as our kids with AST experience. It helps boost your self-worth, a sense of belonging, helps give emotional support. Also, it creates opportunities for our kids to share their hopes and fears and, more importantly, their interests. And it helps us learn about the social world outside. So our friendships help us improve and understand others outside of ourselves, which is extremely important. Here are just some skills that are necessary for our friendship. Obviously, sharing, ability to compromise, considering another person's perspective. Kids with autism have an extremely difficult time seeing that although they're upset, maybe another person might not be upset. Also, another skill that's necessary is companionship or empathy. Empathy is never really taught to kids. For example, if a kid were running on the playground and tripped and fell, a typically developing kid would turn around and either help their friend up, ask if they're okay, maybe understand how it felt because they've fallen down. Where a kid with autism would see someone fall down and maybe possibly not notice at all, maybe notice but not know how or what to say. So they might not have the empathy. Empathy is something that typical developing kids don't get taught. They just learn through interactions and through observing. So it's really important to teach this to our kids with autism. Conflict resolution, or also known as problem solving. So when a concern arises, can our kids problem solve and solve the situation? Reliability, and of course the ability to exchange feelings. So not only can should our kids be able to understand that they're upset, they should also be able to understand that their friend's upset and then how or what that might feel like. So research that's related to autism and social skill development simply says that just because a kid is in a school with other typically developing peers doesn't mean that they're going to learn the social skills. Just by physically integrating students, they won't learn it. So it's very important that we teach them the right social skills in order to interact with their peers. And vice versa, not necessarily do all typical peers have social skills. So it's important to teach social skills in an unstructured setting, regardless of the disability. Also, kids with disabilities have been victimized and bullied. There's research to prove it. And sometimes in these unstructured settings, our kids with ASD are not participating as much, which tends to have them be left out of being invited to birthday parties, sitting at lunch by themselves, and not really participating outside at recess. Our research that supports unstructured time says that our kids with ASD tend to isolate themselves and have low engagement during lunch, recess, and unstructured time. Also, research tells us that typically developing peers, this is the time that they learn majority of their social skills independently. So recess, lunch, and unstructured time are extremely important times in order to work on social skills for all kids. And obviously the result of all this research tells us that our kids with ASD have a more difficult time outside at recess and may isolate themselves or not participate independently. So that's why it's so important to target social skills in the school setting. So our social skills intervention approach that we use here at SARC is based on the principles of applied behavior analysis as appropriate for each child's needs. So similar to an IEP, we want to make sure that our approach is as appropriate and specific to each individual kid. Never does one intervention look exactly like another, but we do go off the basis of applied behavior analysis. The next thing we try to do is, of course, promote healthy relationships and friendships with not only our kids with autism, but also typical developing peers in a school. And then lastly, a component that we have is peer sensitivity or disability awareness. We just teach the other kids effective strategies in order to incorporate their friends that have social deficits and also how to communicate effectively to their friend with a disability or vice versa, our kid with ASD and how to communicate effectively in order to play with his friend. So effective social skill interventions, these are all components that are necessary in order to have an effective social skill intervention. So I think the most important one is that it occurs across multiple naturalistic settings. So if research tells us that kids learn social skills at unstructured times, such as lunch, recess, and breaks, it only makes sense to teach these social skills in these different settings. Peer-mediated, which means that we're teaching the kids the skill instead of having adults facilitate or the adults lead the interaction. We're giving the kids instead ways to communicate with their friends. Obviously, it's important to have it be social skills interventions to be frequent in order to give our kids numerous opportunities to practice the skill. Next, we want to make sure that it's motivating and child-directed for all children, not just our kids with ASD. And cooperative arrangements. So this just means we're not going to take a kid with ASD and teach him social skills with an adult. We want more than one kid to be there. And lastly, we want to make sure it's mutually reinforcing. So at no point do we want our kid with ASD to be the only one receiving reinforcement. We want it to be just as engaging for a typical developing peer to be a part of the interaction as it is for our kids with autism. Sometimes we do this by picking a preferred game for both kids or multiple kids in order to make sure that everybody is reinforced and everybody's enjoying the interaction. So next, the benefits for doing social skills intervention. There's obviously numerous benefits, and there's quite a few things that we see increase. The first thing we always see increase is peer initiation. So once we teach a child some skills in order to interact, they're more likely to initiate a conversation or a game with a peer in during these unstructured times. Reciprocal interaction also increases, and peer acceptance. So we've seen a lot in, which is really great in our typical developing kids, is that once they've learned how to effectively communicate with their friend that might have a difficult time, they're way more accepting and willing and don't really see any difference once they've kind of learned the skill. Participating in the community, opportunities to practice and generalize skills, and of course we see an increased engagement. It makes sense that if we teach them a few different ways to play a game or ways to communicate with friends, we can only imagine that their time spent outside will increase. And lastly, since their time outside is increasing, they're continuing to play more frequently with a friend. We definitely see a decrease in some of these stigmatizing behaviors. For example, a student we worked with in the very beginning did not play and just kind of walked the perimeter of the playground. He sometimes hand-flapped or scripted from a story or a book And after we taught him a few social skills and how to play with his friends, we saw a decrease in his stigmatizing behaviors, and we definitely saw an increase in his engagement with his peers at school, which is exactly what we're looking for. So next on the slide, social skills and supporting peer sensitivity training. typical peers, or the kids and the other kids in the school setting, are supported so they develop their skills, learn how to interact appropriately, and most of all, in order to develop meaningful relationships. So a lot of kids, when they're super young, can kind of converse back and forth, but it's not until they get a little bit older that they kind of develop a relationship or a friendship and want their other friend around with them. So our peer sensitivity helps our typical peers see the importance in making sure everybody's involved and everybody knows how to play the game and everybody gets a turn. It really helps our kids develop relationships that are a little bit more respectful to everybody in the school community. Next, there are five different types of social interactions, and we're going to go over them. So the first one is observing. It means that you might be close to your peers, but it just means that you're watching. You're not in the activity. So you might be walking around. You don't always need to be watching, but you're just near an activity, whatever that activity might be. The next social interaction is parallel play. So this is when two kids are, or can be more than two kids, are completing the same activity, but and they're in close proximity, but they're not interacting with each other. So a lot of times preschool kids do this, and it's very age appropriate. They might both be playing with cars, not talking to each other, but still communicating, but still be playing with the same activity. The next social interaction is responding. So this can be verbally or physically. If someone asks you to play a game, if someone hands you a piece of chalk, you're able to respond to the initiation of another person. The next one is cooperative play. This is completing a play activity with your peers. So this is almost majority of what you see on most playgrounds. You're completing a play activity with everybody, whether it's basketball or kickball or maybe playing in the sand. You're all interacting, you're talking, and you're able to do the task also. And lastly, initiating. So being able to start a social interaction. This might be a conversation or this might be joining a game. Most likely, as you understand, initiating is definitely the hardest thing to teach, but it's not impossible for sure. A lot of our kids struggle to initiate, and we don't usually target that until the end, but it is an extremely important skill in order to get peers and kids all playing together. So this is how we did a case study. Actually, we've done many different schools where we set up the social skills intervention program. And this is just an example of one of them. This is at a playground. So these are the first five steps we completed in order to get this started. We, of course, assessed the strengths and deficiencies of our target student or our kid with autism. We identified some goals, we created an intervention, and we, of course, collected data to monitor and evaluate that the intervention was working. And the last step we did, we wanted to teach across all settings. So this just meant that we made sure that any adult that was around knew how to implement the intervention, and also we wanted to make sure that all of the students knew the intervention along with the staff, and it's not necessarily that we told them, hey, this is the intervention. It's more that we just taught them the skills in order to implement it when we weren't there. So the first step we needed to do was recognize the needs. We are data-driven decision-making, so we would never implement something that a child doesn't need or doesn't have a lack of a skill. We do this. We figure this out by collecting baseline data. We'll go in and observe the student and see exactly what they're performing at. And then we always sit down and make sure that we have a goal through the IEP to help target these specific social skills. And then, of course, then we decide on exactly how we're going to implement the intervention. So pretty consistently, this is the intervention we use, but, of course, we do make changes depending on the kid. When we do go to assess for social skills training, these are some of the objectives that we look at. We like to determine what social skills are needed, need to be addressed, so what's a deficit. We want to determine what's the most effective teaching strategy for this kid, and then also, of course, to determine the most effective teaching modalities. The last one doesn't relate exactly to the kid, but more to the staff. So how can I teach staff and the teachers and the aides exactly how to effectively elicit and facilitate social interactions? These are just some of our assessment strategies. We use a teacher checklist. We do parent interview. We sometimes do also perform a student interview if the student is old enough and can communicate what might be a preference to them. And then most importantly, we do observations. So we always go into the school and observe the student in the setting before we ever start an intervention. Some of the IEP goals that we discuss are important to make sure that they're individualized to the student and, or of course, target an ability that might be contingent on each individual student. So never are we going to target a skill that a kid might already have. So here's a great sample IEP goal. A student will interact with typical peers 85% of the time during recess, lunch, and other structured times. This is, of course, not a goal for every kid, but does work effectively for quite a few of our kids, and we just want to, of course, see the increase in time that they're spent engaged with friends. Here are some other examples of some sample goals. I'm not going to read them all, but some that are more common is the Child D one. So Child D will not display challenging behaviors after losing a game 4 out of 5 opportunities for 3 consecutive days. This is kind of common because a lot of our kids have a harder time losing or don't like the unpredictability of playing a game, so they might display some challenging behaviors. And, of course, when a kid displays challenging behaviors, they are less likely to have other friends want to play with them. So this is something that we do tackle, and it's sometimes difficult. We want to decrease the behavior so that everybody will want to play with you and not avoid your disruptive behavior. So that's a really important goal. Another one that we do use quite frequently is just initiation. So Child A will appropriately initiate with 2 peers during a recess across 3 consecutive days. Also really important, like I said before, initiations can be really difficult, so we always want to work to improve the quality of initiations along with the number of initiations. So another great sample IEP goal that we might write in order to start working on a skill with a kid with autism. So here are just some examples of what to teach. There's quite a few. Sharing and turn-taking, initiating interactions, responding appropriately to greetings and play initiations, bringing up appropriate topics, and reciprocal conversations, and attention to facial expressions and body language, eye contact, respecting personal boundaries, appropriate comments and questions, and asking about others' interests and listening. So obviously, these are a lot of skills that we might teach. You can see kind of how they all might relate or affect each other. It's extremely important I don't know how many different times during that slide appropriate is written, because a lot of our kids might be interested in interacting but don't know the most appropriate way to do that or how to read the body language of their peer when they're not interested, or when maybe it's not something that they would like to play. A lot of our kids with autism have a difficulty with this. For example, I had a student who enjoyed trains and talked about them frequently, and had a hard time playing out at recess because he was seventh and kids weren't that interested in trains. They had other interests, and he wasn't able to read the social cues of his friends that they weren't interested. So he would go up to them and continue to talk about trains repetitively over and over. And finally, we did have to teach him that, you know, when their friend says stop or I'm not interested or walks away or covers their ears, these are all things to tell yourself that maybe let's talk about something else, or maybe even ask why they're covering their ears. So we had to teach him a few of those skills, and then, of course, had to find common ground between friends in order to communicate and have different conversations about stuff that they might both like. So that was challenging, but still really fun to come up with a new way to kind of bridge the gap of interest. So when we first come in, we take baseline. This means that we're just recording the current level of behavior. It's really important when we go in and take baseline that we don't change anything in the environment. We always tell everybody to just act like they normally would act. Never do we remove adults or leave the kids independent, because we want, if, you know, there's an aide at recess, we want the aide to be a part of baseline in order to know how much they can help facilitate interaction. Some of the data measures that we do look at are social initiations with peers, and that's just a basic frequency count. So we look at how many times do our kids with ASD initiate with their peers. Another thing we look at is time engaged. This is a duration or a time frequency, so we, of course, want to see this increase. We're looking at how much time our kids with ASD spend engaged with their peers. And then the last thing we look at is response to peer initiation. So this is a percentage. We're looking at how many times a friend might initiate a conversation and then how many times our kid with ASD does respond back. So the next slide is actually two pictures and videos of two kids that we took baseline with in two different school settings. Both kids have ASD and are around 7 to 8 years old. When we took baseline for both of these kids, neither one had any initiation or any response to a peer. They were engaged probably about less than 5% of their time. So you'll see at the end, after we go through the steps, you'll see exactly kind of what intervention or what the behavior, I'll talk about what the behavior looks like after intervention. So the first thing we do is that we want to provide structure. We set up a structured activity and prompt our peers to invite children to join. So we have a long list of things we've tried to do in order to get kids to play, but sometimes the structure is as structured as a board game outside, and sometimes it's a little less structured and just more of a basketball game or something such as kickball. Depends, of course, once again, on the student's interest. The next thing we do is that we always want to follow the child's lead. We need to find out what our target students like to play, and then, of course, what is age-appropriate and what other kids will want to play also. We go to use preferred activities in order to make sure that peers want to join. So in this picture, you can see it's a group of girls, and they love kind of this chanting back and forth. You know, they're doing goofy dance moves. Our target student loved to dance, so this is how we got her engaged. And We just worked on social initiations and to get everybody to play and then to be on teams in order to take turns. And you can see, you don't really see her standing out, but she's right in the group participating with all the other girls. We do plan the activities for the day to incorporate flexibility. We understand that not every kid is going to want to play the same game every day, so we do try to create a variety of structured activities that are in the realm of the motivation of the kid that we're working with. The next thing we do is that we create opportunities. So we provide numerous opportunities for within an activity for children to interact. We do this by setting up a preferred activity, and sometimes we will give the activity or a peer kind of the lead of the activity. And if they want to play the game, then we kind of put them in charge of the pieces in order for them to communicate with their friends. Also, like I said before, some of our kids like play the same game over and over again. So we try to do our best to set up new activities that are similar to other preferred activities. So we're not playing the same kickball game every day. One day we might play kickball, the next day we'll do soccer, the day after that we might do dodgeball, all kind of doing with gross motor ball skills, which might be the strengths of our target child, but we are trying to expand into other play in order to incorporate more kids and to also, of course, teach our target kid more social skills. The last thing, another thing that we like to do is provide support. So we'll contact our target student within the activity as needed. Sometimes we'll present numerous different prompts, such as verbal prompts or gestural prompts, telling the kid, hey, you could ask your friend if they want to play with you. And then, of course, we'll give these prompts not only to our target child, but also to the peers in the environment. So, for example, we've had a student who had a hard time responding to his name or having his friends gain his attention in order to ask him to play an activity. This is obviously really difficult because if no one can get his attention, no one is very likely in order to invite him to play. So we taught his typical developing peers strategies in order to gain his attention. Some of this included calling his name. And if he didn't respond, then going and tapping his shoulder. If he didn't respond to that, then getting right next to him and saying, hey, Jake, come play with us. We taught his typical developing peers how to effectively communicate with him in order to get him to play. And then, of course, we always look at fading back the number of prompts. So fading back that Jake will be eventually able to respond to just someone calling his name so that he can come play. I had a lot of great experience that once we taught the typical developing peers how to play with their friends, they really were doing a great job of being persistent and making their friend respond to whether or not they wanted to play a turn or whether or not they wanted to come play the game with them. So that has been very exciting to see. The next thing we want to do is we want to reinforce any good behavior. It's important that we immediately reinforce and that we provide this reinforcement within 5 seconds of the behavior. And the reason why we reinforce is that we know reinforcement increases the chance of the behavior happening again. And this is extremely important if we want to see an increase of engagement or initiation with a peer. We reinforce both our target kids or our kids with ASD, and also we reinforce typical students. So majority of the time we try to reinforce just with praise, but sometimes you can understand that's not reinforcing enough, so we might have a preferred item or a preferred activity in order to embed some reinforcement naturally. And the last thing, or another thing, is that we also want reinforcement to be as natural as possible, so it makes it more predictable if the reinforcement is coming from their peer. So, for example, we had a boy who loved Jenga and was good at playing Jenga. So we brought Jenga outside, gave his peers and him an opportunity to take turns and ask for the pieces. And that the reinforcement then came from his peers and not from an adult or a facilitator. It also was natural reinforcing just to get the piece of the Jenga game in order to play. So it was great to absorb kind of a natural contingency in Jenga itself instead of giving a skill for playing Jenga. And then last thing is positive praise. So we provide PARM team for socially appropriate behavior, and we set up more opportunities to practice this. So a great example is someone's playing with chalk, and let's say our kid with ASD just goes up and takes the piece of chalk. We'll set up this opportunity numerous times in order to give our kid with ASD the opportunity to practice asking for the chalk. And as you can imagine, there's plenty of times that we have to practice this in order, and of course reinforce, in order for our kids with ASD to know it's just better to ask for the chalk, get it, and then I can play with the chalk. But we definitely set up these situations in order to practice the skill more often, and then in order to give us more opportunity to reinforce the correct behavior. So after doing intervention with our two kids, here are more pictures. The one on the left, they're playing Jenga. There's our signature Jenga picture. You can see our student, you couldn't even tell who has ASD and who doesn't. He's playing his preferred game and has friends that also want to play the preferred game. Also, our other student on the right is a girl, and they're playing jump rope. Here, the two off to the side are one's jumping and one's holding the rope. This was another skill. Our kids loved playing jump rope, but we definitely had to teach all the kids the appropriate way to play jump rope, and then also how to take turns and interact, and then how to make adaptations for when a kid got stuck, and then waiting your turn. So there were a lot of different components in order to teach this preferred skill for these girls, but in the end, they were playing with their friends, and friends were joining, and actually quite a few people. We had a line for jump rope, so it was a pretty popular game to play out at recess. And then this is just the results from our playground program. You can see the first graph is looking at engagement with peers during recess. It's looking at peers through kindergarten through fourth grade. On the x-axis, you see our four students that we took data on. We actually took more data, but those are the four that we targeted. And then on the y-axis, you see the percent of time. So you can see out of 100% of the time during baseline, the highest any student performed was under 5%. And you can see after intervention on week 16, three out of our four students were performing or engaged over 60% of the time. On our next graph, we're looking at interactions with peers during recess. And once again, on the x-axis, we have our four target students. And then on the y-axis, we're looking at frequency per minute. You can see the frequency was very low during baseline, or zero from some of the students, and after working on interactions for 8 weeks, you can see week 8 is a yellow bar, and almost every student had a significant increase per minute of the frequency of interactions they were having with peers during recess. The next graph is looking at initiations with peers on the playground, same thing, kindergarten through fourth. X-axis is once again looking at our three target students, and the y-axis is looking at the frequency per minute. So you can see once again at baseline, almost every one of our students was at either 0 or 0.1 frequency per minute. And then at the end, everybody had an increase, but consistently they were probably still at just below 0.2 after a 16-week intervention on initiation. So lastly, these are just some additional recommendations and resources included in your handout, and they are at, I think, the last three or four pages. These handouts look at preschool and elementary data, middle school and high school, some of the research articles I referenced, and related books for social skill development and communication, and then also some of the resources with recommendations for structured play and activities. And those are just at the end of your slideshow, or your handout. There's quite a few slides, so I won't go through all of them. Yeah, and at this time, this is the end of my presentation.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Question number one. This session provided me with information on social skills development for children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders. One, strongly agree. Two, agree. Three, disagree. And four, strongly disagree. Please enter your responses now. Again, we do ask that you respond to today's polling questions. Again, the star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, and star 4 for strongly disagree. Question number 2. This session educated me on how to incorporate social interactions for a child diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders. 1. Strongly agree. 2. Agree. 3. Disagree. And 4. Strongly disagree. Question number 3. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. 1. Strongly agree. 2. Agree. 3. Disagree. And 4. Strongly disagree. Question number 4. I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree, or star 2 if you do not agree. And we'll go to our final question. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Star 1 for I am enrolled in the Cigna Family's First Autism Program. Star 2, I am the parent of a child with autism. Star 3, I am a family member of a child with autism. Or star 4 for other. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you would like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, please press star 1 at this time. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question or would like to discuss on any ways to improve this program, that is star 1 at this time. And And we do not have any questions at this time. With that, I would like to turn the call back over to you, Ms. Presti, for any final or closing remarks.
Thank you. Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Megan, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have specific questions about therapy today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of the insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join us on our next Autism Awareness Seminar next month, April 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, when we will be discussing facilitating independence in individuals with autism spectrum. Thank you, and have a good day.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's call. Thank you for your participation, and have a great day.